Shout it out, y'all. This is Moshe Canty, host of the podcast Conscious Moves. This segment is sponsored by Mighty Healthy. Listen, one of the best conscious moves that you can make is to invest in your physical health. Mighty Healthy will help you do just that. It strengthens your immune system, improves digestion, reduces inflammation due to its high concentration of antioxidants, and replenishes your body with the essential vitamins and minerals it needs daily. Go to MightyHealthy.com, and to get 20% off of your purchasing price, type in the code CONSCIOUS. Tell them that Moshe sent you. Shout it out to my listeners out there. This is your host, Moshe Canty, host of the podcast Conscious Moves. I hope all my listeners out there are staying healthy in the midst of this current pandemic and doing everything in your power to make your moves as conscious as they can be. Today is episode 10. So I want to give praises and thanks to Allah for allowing me the opportunity to reach this milestone, because it was a thought that was initially conceived while I was incarcerated to come up with this podcast, which ultimately came into fruition upon my release. So this hard work is a testament to me spending my time wisely even while being in prison. And it's also a testament to the symbiotic relationship that I have with you listeners out there. So I'm thankful for Allah on one hand for allowing me the opportunity to come up with the idea for the podcast, but also thankful that individuals like yourselves would even take time out of your busy and hectic schedules to listen to me and maybe even gain something from it. To use that as a segue, today's title is called Consciously Investing Your Time. I spoke previously about this, but I didn't have a segment invested specifically towards this particular topic. So I just want to talk about this today. You know, I want to speak specifically about this saying that we had in prison, which it seems to be associated with prisoners. But I just want to say it before I expound more on it. But we had a saying that says, don't let the time do you, you do the time. And what this means is that, or what this saying, and I stated already, is that it's usually associated with prisoners because they are, in more cases than not, sentenced to years in prison. So the saying, don't let the time do you, is in reference to wasting time while incarcerated compared to one who makes use of the unfortunate experience to their advantage. I personally saw how this saying affected both the former and latter groups, meaning those who invested their time wisely and those who didn't. For instance, I knew of individuals who all they did was spend their time in the law library. For 3 times a day, 7 days a week, they kept their heads in the books, researching the law in hopes of finding a loophole in their case, which would ultimately lead them to being released from prison. I personally know of many individuals, many stories who fall within this category. In contrast, I also know many more individuals who, unfortunately, instead of going to the law library to fight for their freedom, they chose instead to go to the yard every time the officers called it. These individuals would be more concerned with the politics that were going on inside of the prison system. So again, the first group would be considered those doing the time, and the second group would be those who the time would be doing. Let me just say that properly not investing time has serious consequences. For instance, I'm going to basically just give you an example of these two groups that I basically just described. All right. So for someone who has committed a crime or been accused of committing a crime and then ultimately being convicted and subsequently sentenced after a jury trial, there's a process that usually takes place. So you have an attorney who then file, who has 30 days after you've been sentenced to file what's known as a notice of appeal to the court. And that notice of appeal is letting that court, but also know the appellate court, know that you will intend to challenge your conviction. All right. Now, once you get up north, there's another process that takes place. If you are indigent, in this case, if you don't have any resources, financial resources for that matter, an attorney will be appointed to you. All right. To help you fight your case on the appellate level. So hopefully your trial lawyer did everything that they were supposed to do at your trial to preserve the record for appeal, so that when your appellate attorney gets the record, as they call it, then now he or she has the opportunity to review all of these issues that they then can raise to the appellate court. All right. So this takes time. This is a process. All right. Okay. So after this is done, meaning after your direct appeal is done, it then goes through a process of whether or not these judges will render a decision. In this case, they will either affirm your conviction, which means that you now will continue to do the time that, you know, the lower court gave you at your sentencing. Or in this case, they may modify your sentence. Or what that means is that they may, if you was given 20 years, they might modify it to 10 years. Or they might give you a reversal, which means that they will then now afford you the opportunity to get a new trial. Okay? So what happened, this is just the process as I'm explaining this to you, right? So you go through this process of appeal. So let's assume that your appeal has been denied. And then it goes up to another court, which is the highest court in the state of New York, which is the New York State Court of Appeals. You have to go through the process of submitting what's known as a leave application. And during this leave application, you have to determine, the court has to determine whether or not they're going to accept this leave application. And they're going to determine whether or not they're going to grant your leave to appeal to their court. Because they don't always look at the appellate division's decisions and things of that nature to determine whether or not they're going to review it. It has to be an issue of law, meaning it has to be such of an issue that occurred at the lower level, which was preserved or objected to by your trial attorney, that they will then now want to look at this issue. Or it might be an issue that's just so egregious that they want to look at it in the interest of justice, whether or not that issue has been preserved or not. Very rare, though. But in this case, let's assume that the highest court in this case of the state of New York then denies you a leave to appeal. Then you have 90 days from that denial to file what's known as a writ of certiorari to the United States Supreme Court. So let's assume that you don't file what's known as a writ of certiorari to the United States Supreme Court, right? Okay. So you don't file that writ of certiorari in the aftermath of your leave application being denied from the New York State Court, New York Court of Appeals. So 90 days after that New York State Court of Appeals decision, you have 1 year. 1 year to file what's known as a writ of habeas corpus to the district court in which you were convicted in. So being that I was convicted in Kings County, the district court that I would then file my writ of habeas corpus is the Eastern District, which is at 225 Cabman Plaza, downtown Brooklyn. All right. So that's the jurisdiction. The Eastern District has then what's known as jurisdiction over my case. So I would then file my writ of habeas corpus to that court or whatever the case may be like that. If you do not file that writ of habeas corpus within 1 year, you will be procedurally barred from doing so. The only way you will be able to submit, according to the statute, according to Title 28 United States Codes, Section 2254 or 2241 through 54, the only way you will be able to then step outside the parameters of that law or be, in this case, step outside the parameters of being procedurally barred in this case, is whether or not you fall up under the provisions that allow you, let's say, to move around the rules, so to speak, right? And in this case, not everybody falls. So if, let's say, the United States Supreme Court renders a decision and that decision then becomes retroactive where it can be applied and it affects you, although you may have been convicted and your appeal has been denied, then yes, that's how that would apply for you. Or you were able to obtain, let's say, newly discovered evidence. And in the event that that occurs, you obtain this newly discovered evidence that you were not able to obtain or not able to be in possession of at the time your appeal was being heard, and so on and so forth. So this, the reason why I'm explaining this is because during this process, I'm putting it in context of individuals who are in prison, right? And those individuals who are in the law library and those individuals who are not. If you're in the law library and you have knowledge of this basic information, because this is basic information that you should know about, then you will take advantage of it. If, on the other hand, you are of the latter group that I made reference to, individuals who are more concerned with being in the yard, getting high, prison politics, among other things, then you will just totally not even know anything about this. This is something that you will just know nothing about. So if you, let's say, for instance, have 45 years to life, right? Or 50 years to life, right? And you don't have knowledge of this, there will be, it will make it much more difficult for you to try to challenge your conviction on the federal level if you wanted to do that once you became knowledgeable of it. But because you might be just walking around, wandering, getting high, doing what you're doing in terms of being focused on the prison politics, you will lose out on a golden opportunity and maybe even spend the rest of your life in jail because you didn't care anything about your freedom. And I've seen individuals who 25, 30 years later wish that they invested the time needed to basically gain the knowledge that would ultimately allow them to fight for their freedom in comparison to individuals who took advantage of the opportunity and were able to get their freedom as a result of that. A significant period of my incarceration was involved with the jailhouse politics. I mean, at the time I was gangbanging. I was caught up in that mindset of what was going on inside the jail. Yo, who was this? What was that? What was popping? What's this? What's going on? And all that type of stuff. And I suffered as a result of that. Again, I spent countless years of 23-hour lockdown as a result of those foolish decisions, right? But I was able at some point to grab a hold of myself. Even while being under very stressful conditions in 23-hour lockdown, I still utilized that time of being on lockdown wisely. So I didn't waste that time, all right? That's not to suggest that while not being under these circumstances, I didn't invest in the time to educate myself. But being forced by necessity under those circumstances ultimately put me in a position where I had no other choice but to educate myself, right? So for me, I used that to my advantage. I didn't allow my circumstances of being locked down for 23 hours a day to break me down like it did to so many other individuals. I've seen individuals go up in those circumstances and don't come out the same. They didn't come out the same because the conditions beat them down. They allowed that to happen to them. And it's not a humane situation to put someone in a cage to expect that they will be normal after that. So not everybody is able to bounce back from that and appear to have it all figured out, right? So in this case, I was able to the best of my ability, gain some traction in that. And I just want to pose a question to everyone out there, all right? With the example I just used, because a lot of times we in prison like to use that saying as if that saying only applies to us. When that saying doesn't just apply to people who are incarcerated. And I used to always tell individuals that this is not something that only affects us because we're incarcerated. This affects everybody who lives on the face of this earth. So let me just ask this question. How are you investing your time? I'm going to ask it again. How are you investing your time? Now, this particular saying, are you doing the time or is the time doing you? It has no connection to one's or no relevance to one's ethnicity, their race, their religion, your sex, your social, your economical status. None of this matters. We all have the same amount of time allotted to us equally, each and every one of us. And this is very important as we move forward. So I want us to focus on that as each and every one of us looks at how we're investing our time. And this is why I specifically titled today's segment of this podcast called Consciously Investing Your Time, because the hope is that we can gain some awareness of how we're spending our time and whether or not this time is being invested properly. So I've spoken specifically about that because 24 hours a day are allotted to each and every one of us. You could be Donald Trump. You could be a billionaire. You could be Jeff Bezos. You can be Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Jay-Z. You can be the vagabond on the street, the drug addict, the drug dealer. Doesn't matter. The war criminal, it doesn't matter who you are. Everybody has 24 hours in a day. All of us. What distinguishes each of us from the other is how each of us are investing in that time. Now, again, how are you investing your time? Are you wasting it? Or are you properly managing it? Put this in context to us making conscious moves and unconscious moves. Again, are you wasting it or are you properly managing it? If you are wasting it, then this is an indication that you need to reevaluate where you are on your chessboard. And seriously focus on what your next move will be. Because what this would indicate is that you're not managing your time properly. And this is this comes with serious consequences. But I'm going to help you guys explain how I begun the process of making sure that my moves counted. Because at some point on my journey, it wasn't always easy for me to sit down and map out as to how I should go about organizing my day. I remember I spent years and years and years in prison. So for me, it was being caught up. It was figuring out what was more important. And I had to really, really reevaluate my priorities and try to figure out what was best for me. But that didn't come without a personal struggle. I had to gain a hold of myself. And once I was able to say to myself, I'm tired of being put in a position in which I'm not benefiting or profiting from the time that I'm investing within myself or just in time in general, then I knew I had to make some serious changes. So I want us to focus on that right now, because that's obvious of very important. But let me explain how I begun to do that. What I did was I started out with a chart. All right. And with this chart, it was like I called it a time chart. And it was something similar to what looks like a spreadsheet on Excel. For those of us who are familiar with a spreadsheet, for those of us who are not, I'll explain it. What I did was I just created a box and I just divided up the box by the days of the week. So for instance, in one box, in one column, that is, I put Monday. And underneath that, I put the times of the day that I got up. So let's say, for instance, for Monday, I put the date, Monday, November, tomorrow's what, the 23rd? I put November 23rd, 2020, Monday. Underneath that, I got up, let's say, for instance, at 5 o'clock in the morning. So what I did was I would then write that down on there. And I would say, from Monday, 5 to 6 a.m., I prayed and I exercised. So I know I got up at 5. I prayed. I worked out. After I worked out, I was sweaty, whatever the case may be like that. So from 6 to 6:30, I took care of my hygiene. From 6:30 to 7, I ate my breakfast. All right, after I took care of my eating, my praying and doing everything like that, from 7 to 9, I then study legal work. I became immersed in criminal law, in civil law, in constitutional law. Okay? No matter how much. Now, I'm just giving you an example of what I did within these particular hours, but I'm going to continue to go on. From 9 to 9:15, you know, I gave myself time to sit back, rest, you know, stretch a little bit. Bones might need my muscles might need a little bit of stretching due to the workout, due to the stressful conditions. So just to stay active, walk around the cell, I would basically then start stretching. All right, I would get right back into it. From 9:15 to 11, I would study my Swahili courses. All right, meaning that we had classes where we held classes on the gates about the language of Swahili. This is what we did. Some of us did Spanish, others did Swahili. Others did Arabic. We did what we could under the circumstances, right? So we taught ourselves as much as we could. We had classes about different topics. We did a number of things to keep us alert. Sometimes we did it with individuals who we personally knew, or sometimes we did it alone. Sometimes the environments were so stressful where individuals were spitting at each other, throwing feces, yelling all day on the gate, kicking, banging, throwing food. It was madness. It was a madhouse. So in under those circumstances, sometimes you just had to just deal with yourself and go in the back of your cell, sit on the bed, put your back up on the wall and just do what you possibly could. Gain some control over your mind so that you can ultimately empower yourself. And that's how the day continued. So you, if you're serious about trying to lay out exactly what each step is for you, you got to basically do the same thing. And that's how I did it. So my entire day would look like this. Now, I stopped at the Swahili courses, but at some point I would lay down, maybe take a nap. All right. Get back up. I would go back to doing my studies all day. But my whole day looked like this. All right. Now, if you notice, after years of doing this, you will see not only some organization, but you will also get an opportunity to see how educated you become in various topics. So just imagine someone under my circumstances who all we had to our advantage was the opportunity to educate ourselves on various topics. So for instance, here I am learning about the law. I studied my case. I was locked up for attempted murder in the second degree, criminal possession of a weapon, and robbery in the first degree. Those are my charges. I had a number of charges, but I was indicted on the 26-count indictment. Okay? So I knew my case from the top all the way to the bottom. It's nothing you can tell me about my case as it applied to the law. And I cannot go to a case and explain to you exactly what that meant. So I educated myself about the law, the criminal law on my case. So if you ask me about my case and you need to know what the facts were, I can tell you the facts. If you want to know the law and how the law applied to that, I can also tell you that as well. But there was also stuff happening to us under the circumstances where you needed to know about the civil law. And civil law meant that under Title 42 USC 1983, you need to know about how your civil rights were being violated. The officers in there, racism was at an all-time high. Systemic racism is real. It happens inside the prison systems. Prisoners are being killed with impunity. No one is being held accountable for prisoners being starved out by racist officers. Officers walking by saying, say white power or you won't eat. I've been in those situations like that where you had to dig down deep for digging deep for that strength so that you would not succumb to your oppressors under those circumstances. And there was some real stuff going on. But again, you needed to know the law because you couldn't fight back the way which would ultimately give you more years in the box. You had to fight back to ultimately address these issues in court so that the judges would ultimately make a ruling in your favor to prevent this abuse from continuing to even happen. So if you put my name into the computers, you're going to see multiple cases come up. The reason why is because I'm just one of many who refused to accept the abuse and the oppression that was taking place behind the prison walls. Okay, so it was happening, but you also needed to empower yourself. So a number of things that they gave you were a pen and a pad, but they also allowed you to have law library books. They also allowed you to have materials and stuff like that. So it was up to you whether or not if you were going to utilize this information to your advantage. For me, I use it to weaponize myself and to help myself and other individuals fight back against our unjust or our mistreatment under those circumstances. All right. But these are ways in which we had to empower ourselves. But again, going back to investing the time, if we did not invest our time, then it would have only made us and our conditions that much more worse because we would have simply accepted not only the overt abuse, but our own ignorance would have been another form of oppression and abuse because it would have been self-imposed. And it's no more form of nothing more worse than self-imposed oppression when you allow yourself to remain in a state of ignorance. All right. So just going back to that. So not only did we know about constitutional law, civil law, or criminal law, we also had to study about history. We also studied about philosophy. We also studied sociology, psychology, archaeology, anthropology, among other things, and other things. So this is why individuals in prison, you see individuals become so inundated or overwhelmed with information that they just now want to just tell it to the world like how Damon Wayans used to be in the TV show in Living Color. He used that as a joke to quote big words and stuff like that because individuals is doing everything in their power to educate themselves. All right. Not everybody, but in many instances, a lot of individuals are definitely doing everything in their power to educate themselves. So this form of empowerment now, again, becomes a weapon, but it's how you invest that time. And this is ultimately what these various topics then make you, to some extent, an expert. In fact, with hours of research and study, you become this expert to the point that individuals now then come to you for advice. They ask you questions about the law. They ask you questions about history. They ask you questions about things that, and you become like a jailhouse scholar, if not a scholar just in general. All right. And I always used to advise individuals, the more that you acquire in here, you can then now transfer these skills once you get back out there. Meaning to society, you become an asset, not only to your community, but to the world at large. Okay. So this is something that we shouldn't take for granted because although I spent 22 years of incarcerated, I still use the time wisely to my advantage. So I made sure to acquire the necessary skills that many organizations, employers alike were in dire need of. And I was also, in addition, I was also able to acquire the knowledge that would give me the tools needed to empower myself, family and community and society and the world in general, as I just stated. But and ultimately that helped me once I came home. I came home on September 8th. I went on the job interview that next week. I was hired on my job October 5th. I was hired as a youth employment mentor, as a case manager for the Center for Community Alternatives, and from there through their affiliate program. So now I'm helping now younger individuals obtain employment. I'm teaching them the soft skills that they need. Individuals within the 16 to 24 year old demographic, I'm teaching them the soft skills that they need to help not only employ themselves or become employed in at certain organizations and employers and stuff like that. But I'm giving them the skills that they're going to need in terms of empowering themselves. Financial literacy skills, where they might say, listen, I want to become my own, I want to become an entrepreneur. That was another thing that we learned on the inside, that we studied how to become our own bosses, meaning how can you become a CEO, a COO, a CFO, among other things? How can you operate your own business as, let's say, Jeff Bezos? We had many classes like these. All right. I have certificate certification from these classes because, again, this is information that's constantly being disseminated in these prisons across the state. But it's whether or not you're taking advantage to use it to your you're taking the opportunity to use these to your advantage. For me, I was thankful to get this knowledge. I didn't use that knowledge. My wife and I, we then said, listen, instead of us just having this knowledge, we're going to use it now to incorporate. And this is ultimately what led to the incorporation of my business, Conscious Mind Ventures, LLC. But through that knowledge, it then became transferable. And then ultimately now it's going to empower, and it's empowering my family. I'm saying that because, one, we now know that entrepreneurship is something that I learned in prison. I mean, I learned this stuff in prison. But now it's a transferable skill that I was able to bring home to me. So investing in your time is not something that is just a prison concept. I don't want us to get the notion that somehow creating a chart, a time chart, is some prison stuff. No, this is something that we can do every day. And I hope that everybody who's listening can take advantage of that. Don't take this lightly. Because if you could just balance out or manage, excuse me, if you could organize your time chart properly and you can then have an opportunity to see how your time is being allocated towards particular endeavors, then you'll be able to manage your time when you see that you're wasting it. For instance, let's say, for instance, you like to watch TV. But you watch 5 hours of TV every day, 7 times 5, which is 7 days a week. That's 35 hours of TV per week. Let's say, for instance, you do it for a month now. That's 140 hours of TV a month. In a year, that's 1,820 hours per year. So you've wasted 1,820 hours watching television. Okay, so if you want to focus on your moves, you now then can say, hold on, I need to do something about these 1,800 hours I wasted watching TV. Whereas if I wanted to make a conscious move, I can then now take time from that watching TV to acquire a skill. A skill that can ultimately be transferable, that you can use it to ultimately empower yourself. So then there's no reason, there's no excuse as to why you're saying, well, you know what, I'm twisted. You know, I'm not doing too good. I'm stressed out. My money ain't right. It might be that your money's not right because you're wasting your time. That might be a reason why your money ain't right. Now, we can speak about the socioeconomical conditions confronting us as a people, which we know exists. But we also need to take responsibility for the stuff that we do on a daily basis that contributes or that even perpetuates and that exacerbates, makes worse our conditions. So in this case, we can't blame anybody for how we spend our time. We can only blame ourselves. Yeah, we can blame others for their policies, their regulations, stuff that they have in place that hinders and hampers us from being able to move forward. Without no doubt, we can do that. But at some point, you have to take responsibility for you hampering your own self. And if you're wasting your time watching TV, which has nothing to do with how you're going to be empowered, then make no mistake about it. You're doing that to yourself. All right. And nobody's going to say we need to pat you on your back or make you feel or feel sorry for you, so to speak. So excuse me for that. All right. So with that being the case, my point is this, right? In order to make conscious moves, we have to start examining our moves in real time. So for me, this chart then allowed me to set short and long-term goals for myself. In fact, before coming home, what I did was I put together a goal sheet that highlighted the goals I wanted to accomplish in 1 week, 1 month, 90 days, 6 months, 9 months, 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, and even 5 years. So we need to understand that. So I was able to accomplish most of my goals, my 90-day goals, in 30 days. Because what I did was I put myself in a position in which I said, you know what? I want to accomplish this when I come home. I don't want to waste any time. I don't want to waste doing this. I don't want to waste doing that. So I've been successful because I didn't waste any time. So while other individuals was out there doing whatever it is that they was doing, that's their business. I said that I want to go home and I want to go home with these plans in mind. Somebody told me while I was incarcerated, yo, Mo, man, when you get home, you're not going to go back to school. I said, why would you say that? He said, yo, bro, you're not going to go back to school because out there in the streets, man, everything is different, man. Things is moving so fast. I said, yo, bro, you don't even know what you're talking about. He said, yo, I'm telling you, Mo, that's some jail stuff. You in college now because you in jail. Oh, yeah? Well, tomorrow I have a meeting with the admission advisor about finishing off my semester, my last semester, so I can obtain my associate's degree. And then after that, the hope, inshallah, is to obtain my bachelor's degree. And after that, my master's, then my PhD. This is what I intend on doing. These goals are already established, right? These are what my goals are. By Allah's mercy, this will be done. Now, I'm simply saying this because not to throw them out there to somehow gloat. No, I'm trying to inspire individuals and show individuals this is exactly what you can do. You can do this. You know why you can do it? Because I can do it. We all can do it. We just have to sit down, map out our time, and make realistic goals and tell ourselves that we can accomplish this. If we put our minds to it, we can accomplish this. All right? We just got to stop making excuses as to why we can't do it and stop putting ourselves in situations which ultimately weaken us. But we can definitely do it. There's no doubt about it. I just wanted to say that so that we don't lose sight of the overall fact of that. But again, you know, we ultimately have to, you know, start believing that we can do something before we actually can do it. And there's no doubt about it. We can definitely do it. Now, I started off by speaking about what was going on in the prison setting. And the reason why I wanted to focus on that was because, one, I noticed that much of what goes on in prison has a direct or an indirect way of finding its way back into the community. All right. We see it happening all the time. The culture itself is being influenced by what's happening in prison. One way of looking at that is due to the gang culture. The gangs that began in prison have now found themselves back in our communities, much to our chagrin. But we know that is something that takes place. So I don't want us to focus on the negative part of that. I want us to focus on the saying part of that, that in spite of it being something that's popularized in prison, don't let the time do you, you do the time. I want us to take that saying out here in the society that we live in out here in the free world, the so-called free world. I want us to say that and then use that to our advantage as to how we're going to then now take responsibility over ourselves. All right. So again, I gave you guys a way to go about doing that. It's simple. We don't have to make this too long-winded, all right? It's a real simple way to do it. You want to do it, it's up to you, all right? With that, I want to shout out Man Up, the brothers at Man Up Buddha. Definitely want to shout the brothers out. I want to shout out the brothers, Richie, Sha, Kenny, and all the brothers that's doing good work. I went over there. I was able to help a brother obtain the necessary employment. And they was on their job in terms of helping out. So I'm really appreciative of that. I'm also appreciative of the other organizations who I've encountered on this journey since coming home. In addition to among other people who have rendered their assistance for the people who are in need. But the work that the people are doing is definitely something to keep in mind. If you don't have anything good to contribute, then it's probably not best you say anything. Because what's happening is that people are making comments about, you know, the work that others are doing, but they're not doing anything themselves. You know, ask yourself, how can you contribute to the upliftment of not only yourself, but others? All right. But before you can try to change the lives of others, you need to first focus on yourself. But I wanted to shout the brothers at Man Up Inc. for the work that they're doing in the community. And I hope that they continue to do the work to help save as many lives as possible. They have a program every Wednesday that I was thankful to be a part of last Wednesday. I contacted a few of the brothers who I personally know and told them to tune in. This was individuals coming together for a common objective to try to sit down and map out what we can do in terms of trying to uplift ourselves and the community. So this was definitely positive. It's every Wednesday from 6:30 to 8. And that was good. So I think it's every Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken. But for the next couple of weeks, I don't know when it's going to end, but I think December 16th is the last day. So if individuals are focused on doing that, then I would advise them to get in contact with Man Up. You can go to their website, www.manupinc.org, And all the information is there regarding that. So on another note, I just want to shout out the brothers who are obviously in the pen. Y'all brothers continue to hold your head. And to their families, I want to shout y'all out as well, because I can only imagine how difficult it is for y'all to basically hold y'all husbands down, y'all brothers down, y'all family members down. It can't be easy doing this work from the outside. When one person is locked up, everybody's locked up who's supporting them. So it's a struggle, man. I've been there. I know it's definitely a struggle. It was a struggle for my family. So I can only imagine how other families are suffering from it as well. Listen, man, we're not going to waste any time. If you have an opportunity to try to better yourself, then do everything in your power to do so. We see what's going on right now. It's a lot happening around the world. It's a lot taking place. You don't want to be sitting still right now when all this stuff is going on, man. Become very active. Do the best that you possibly can, man. Take the time out to invest in yourself. And hopefully, inshallah, your life and the lives of your loved ones will be better as well. With that, I want to close out by saying a conscious mind makes the best moves. And what that means is that the more conscious you are, the more aware you are, the likelihood exists that you'll make better moves. With that, I'm going to shout it out. I want to tell everybody who's been supporting me, I love y'all. Assalamu alaikum.